David, how are you?
Good, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
Boy, it's a tough time to be a teacher, isn't it?
Teaching is always very hard work, and when you add to that the attacks that a number of governors have on the unions that teachers voted to represent them in a Democratic election, and governors wanting to take away their rights to collective bargaining, it makes it triply as hard.
David, teaching has been a great career. I've got a best friend who's a teacher, and over the years they have gained the opportunity through collective bargaining, if you will, to have great salaries, great pensions, great benefits, great retirement packages, a lot of that paid for by taxpayers. And what we hear a lot about now is that the taxpayers can't afford to pay that anymore. States can't afford to pay, and they're going to have to give some of that up. What's your take on that?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't label any of those things as great. They have good salaries, good benefits, good retirement. Teachers get paid far less than their counterparts in the private sector with the same amount of education. And when you think about what their job is and that we entrust their children to them, their pay is not what it should be. Having said that, teachers and school employees recognize the times we are in. And contract after contract includes concessions. Concessions on health care, paying more for the health care benefits has been going on for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Concessions in salaries. Secretaries at Detroit Public Schools making $25,000 a year take a 3% pay cut. You know, paraprofessionals at Dearborn Schools making $20,000 a year take a 3.5% pay cut. So through collective bargaining, concessions have been made because school employees recognize the economic times we're in.
So what do teachers do now? What can they do to protect what they have?
Well, that means keeping collective bargaining. And these attacks on collective bargaining have nothing to do with the financial situation that states are in. If you take the number one example, Wisconsin, the unions in Wisconsin have already said to Governor Walker, we understand the economic situation in Wisconsin. Let's sit down. We will accept a lot of the concessions that you want, but we need to collectively bargain them. You can't just unilaterally set them. Employees have voted in a union democratically to represent them. So the fact that Walker turned down that offer indicates that Governor Walker's attack on his elimination of public sector collective bargaining in Wisconsin has nothing to do with the financial situation. The unions were ready to address the financial situation. So we hope that by building up community support, by building up what is clearly a renewed and reactivated labor movement, and just by showing the facts, we'll be able to convince lawmakers that this isn't the way to go. You know, in Michigan, there's legislation introduced concerning emergency financial managers, which are needed at times, but this legislation would let them wipe out collective bargaining. And, you know, the irony of that is in Detroit Public Schools, which has had an emergency financial manager, it is the union, it is the Detroit Federation of Teachers that developed financial solutions that were bargained into the contract. So, eliminating collective bargaining is not about the financial situation. Eliminating collective bargaining is an ideological approach to undercutting labor unions.
Do we still need unions? Do we still need collective bargaining? Won't the market bear whatever people should be making, just like what happens in the private sector?
Well, first of all, a bunch of the private sector is organized. But I would just ask your listening public, if the market doing whatever the market does is satisfactory, and I would just ask them to look at Wall Street. And a free-running market economy with no collective bargaining, with limited regulations, and you end up in a Wall Street fiasco, which is really the cause of the financial situation we're in, not Labor Union.
David Hecker is the president of the American Federation of Teachers here in the state of Michigan. Want to get your take on school mergers, especially since it's been proposed by some in Rick Snyder's administration.
Well, the a big part, a big strength of education here in Michigan is local community control. You know, schools are the heart of the community, a lot of times they're the soul of the community. There are a number of studies that have been done that show that that things can be done to save money without consolidating districts. For example, you could share, smaller districts next to each other can share superintendents. You could share some of the business functions. But studies have shown, you really need the teachers, even if you're together. You know, you need the school secretaries, you need the food service workers. So there really isn't that much savings that come with consolidation that you can't already achieve by sharing some services.
A recent story out about high school students, many in the state of Michigan, aren't college ready from an analysis from a report from the Department of Education. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Well, that's, the facts are the facts. And I know, we represent K-16, so we have an awful lot of members who work in higher education. And we hear that a lot of students come and are not as ready as they need to be. And absolutely, that has to be addressed. Our union has never, ever supported the status quo in public education. We've been on the forefront of talking about what needs to be done to enhance public education. But I'll say one thing, that if K-12 education is reduced $474 a child, as proposed by Governor Snyder, not only are you not going to address that problem, you're going to make that problem that much larger.
Before we start talking about that reduction and what each pupil will receive, I wanted to ask you, why is it that our college students, or many of them, are not ready yet? Where'd we go wrong?
Well, where we go wrong, first of all, it certainly varies. There are school districts which produce students who are very ready and excel, and there's also students who come out who aren't quite as prepared. And there are a great number of factors that go into that. And, let me suggest that those factors aren't just factors within the four walls of a school building. I mean, I give a personal example whenever I'm asked a question like this. Thanks to the labor movement, our three kids, my personal three kids, when they were in school, came home to three computers at home, came home to two parents who've had a lot of formal education, thanks to the labor movement, come home to a family that within some reason could afford to purchase any kind of additional help, tutoring, extra books that they needed. My three kids had a big advantage. Given the economic standing of the family that they came into, every parent wants to do the very, very best for their child. Not every family has the resources that my family is fortunate to have, thanks to the labor movement, to provide those, and that absolutely has an impact.
And before we let you go, David, tell us what will happen should more than $450 per pupil be lost.
Oh, well, it's a laundry list, Tony. I mean, class sizes will skyrocket to 50, 55 children in a class, making it so difficult for teachers to teach and students to learn. Programs will be cut left and right. Schools will be deteriorating as far as not being clean, as far as the infrastructure falling apart. There will be, parents will have to figure out how to get their kids to school. The children will take school buses now. It'll be a travesty. It will be a travesty for our children and the future of this state. We have to invest in this state to get this state out of the economic problems it has. You don't get out of these problems by slashing away.
And what's interesting is how much money we spend in the prison system per prisoner.
We spend an inordinate amount of money in the prison system. Money can be moved around in the state budget, but let me tell you, moving around the state budget does not address the situation. It's almost like moving around deck chairs on the deck of the Titanic. You know, one quick thing I'll mention. You know, this year, due to previous legislation, our income tax rate is due to go down from 4.35 to 4.25. So if you're a family making $45,000 a year, that puts $45 in your pocket. Now, you ask that family, would you rather have $45 in your pocket, or would you rather have 5-6 less children in your child's classroom? Would you rather have a police officer keeping your community safe? Would you rather have a fire department that is ready to respond, God forbid, there's a fire at your house? Would you rather have good roads? Would you rather have your garbage picked up regularly? And I would bet that almost every family would say, in that income range, I'll give up $45 to get those services. If that income tax cut does not take effect, the state has $160 million more dollars. I mean, you know, to me, that's a no-brainer. When you're talking about a child's education, you're talking about community safety, you're talking about health care provided by public hospitals, you know, this legislature should immediately say, we're not going to lower the income tax rate by 0.1%. You know, that's a small piece. There's much more it needs to do on the revenue side, but that's such an obvious piece this legislature needs to do immediately.
And one final question, David. Are teachers, are school districts ready for the new testing that will require higher standards, higher test scores?
Well, the teachers are always ready. School employees are always ready and work pretty hard with our children to educate our children. We, you know, the overemphasis on standardized tests has a detrimental impact on our children's education because teachers are forced to teach to the test. And teaching to the test is not the best way to educate a child. You know, it's not about passing tests. It's about getting a real, true, rigorous education. So teachers are ready. Teachers always are. But we overemphasize standardized tests in this state and in this country.
David Hecker is the president of the American Federation of Teachers here in Michigan. David, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me, Tony.